thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
And smiles.
Here's John Williams.
It's Friday. Hi, it's 108. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio. Fridays are our bright side days. We'll close the show, end the week, and start your weekend at 2:40 with the bright side. Folks calling in saying good, happy things. You will smile at 2:40. It's the law in some states. Yeah, if you haven't heard that segment, I hope you can. 2:40, we'll do the bright side, as we always do. And, you know, the Joint Relief Institute is a sponsor of that segment, and they gave us a bunch of bright side of life pins, which absolutely are a smile. And and we're randomly handing them out to people that follow us on social media and that call in on the show at 2:40. Your bright side could get you a bright side pin from our friends at the Joint Relief Institute. Wear it happily. That's at 2:40 here at WGN Radio. Well, the big story, of course, today is the story of that awful shooting in Christchurch. I had long thought that maybe the worst kinds of violence like this were some sort of worldwide anomaly in the United States. You did not hear about these sorts of things elsewhere. When you think that maybe the violence virus has spread to a place that has very little experience with this, it breaks your heart doubly, doesn't it? It's a horrible thing to happen, and a horrible thing to happen anywhere. But when it happens there, it seems yet another kind of alarming, doesn't it? And so we will talk briefly about this a little later on in the show. I don't have anything productive to say about it now, except that it just breaks your heart and that you hope that something like that doesn't happen again. The other story that we've been following around here, of course, is the college admissions scandal, which by perspective seems less important now, doesn't it? But look at the number on that lawsuit. I guess we should have seen this coming, right? That somebody would begin to sue. You know that it is insane the way parents hope for their kids to get into the colleges of their choice. And this really is, boy, you talk about a first world problem. Most of the world doesn't have colleges like we do. Most of the people in this country don't get a college education. So if your kid is lucky enough to graduate from the College of DuPage and then maybe Northern, that already makes them elite. But no, you want them to go to the University of Illinois or Northwestern. I get that. Or Stanford or Yale. And then if you don't get that for your kid, you feel so injured if somebody else cheated to take that space. And I can only liken it in my experience. We didn't go through any of that. But maybe the way you felt when your kid didn't get to play on the volleyball team, even though she was much better setter than Megan. Or when your kid didn't get to pitch in baseball. Or whatever it was. And, you know, looking back, you go, wow, I was kind of insane there, wasn't I, honey? Hey, honey, we lost our minds when Timmy was about 12, didn't we? Remember that tournament in Mokena where I stormed the field? That was weird, wasn't it? That there's a little bit of that in all of us.
One thing that comes to my mind with this whole story is how we have already started the argument of how valuable is a degree these days. We spend all this money on a great education, and so many times it doesn't really mean that much when you're applying for certain jobs.
I agree on that. I think also degrees cost too much.
And yes, I agree as well.
And depending on the job you get, yeah, I don't know that it matters if you're from U of C or UIC. You know, you're going to be an accountant. Listen, I understand the value of you. And then there's some degrees that really do matter, right? Like if you graduate from Notre Dame, I think that gives you a leg up getting hired, getting that first job.
Definitely.
If you have a degree from Harvard, that is discernibly different than it is if you went to Southern Illinois at Carbondale, as I did. But by and large, I think there is truth to that. It doesn't matter where you go. It's what you do after you go. It's what you do when you get there. It's what you do when you get there. So this outraged mom, Jennifer K. Toy from Oakland, California, said her son Joshua, and somewhere there's a young man named Joshua going, Mom, please don't, no. But Joshua's mom, Jennifer, said that he didn't get into any of the schools that were implicated in the wide-ranging college admissions scandal. I'm reading from thehill.com now. Joshua and I believe that he'd had a fair chance, just like all of the other applicants, but he didn't make the cut for some undisclosed reason. Well, I'm outraged and hurt because I feel that my son, my only child, she literally said, was denied access to a college, not because he failed to work and study hard enough, but because wealthy individuals felt that it was okay to lie, cheat, steal, and bribe their children's way into a good college. And so she is suing for $500 billion, which is a lot. Felicity Huffman and Laura Loughlin are among the roughly 30 parents charged Tuesday in what officials have called the largest college admission scam ever prosecuted by the Department of Justice. Poor Lori Loughlin. Hallmark Channel's canceled its relationship with her.
Not Hallmark.
Well, that's the problem. If it were any other channel but Hallmark, they'd go, whatever, you idiot. But it's the Hallmark Channel. It's the hallmark of good behavior. You know, it's about as scrubbed a network as you can get these days. And so they just can't have that. You know what? If they had kept their relationship with her, if she had appeared in another movie at Christmas, I would have been okay with that. I wouldn't have gone, hey, wait a minute. This isn't right.
Or kept her and only cast her as a villain.
Well, they don't really have villains on the Hallmark Channel. That's the
such
point.
As they
go
are,
to Lifetime.
Right?
They've just upped their game to an occasional Chardonnay. You know, there'd be a scene where there'd be like a Christmas party or something. And I'm like, where's the booze? This is the worst Christmas party I've ever seen. So they will have, you know, light references to white beverages. But that's very minimal on that network. Anyway, Huffman and Loughlin were among the roughly 30 parents. Toys, this is the mother now, is not the first lawsuit, though, following the reveal of the scam. Two Stanford University students filed a lawsuit against the elite universities, arguing that they were not given equal admission opportunity and that their degrees are less valuable because of the scandal. So you just can't win for trying if you're some of these places and people. Okay, on the one hand, the people that didn't get in are going to sue you for $500 billion. The people that did get in are throwing up their hands going, well, evidently anybody can get in here. Lori Loughlin's kid's at USC, and if I went to USC, well, suddenly my degree is devalued? Wow, are you people overthinking it? This is what I'm telling you. We invent injury. We kind of lose our minds when it's about our kids. The people that are doing this, the $500 billion lawsuit, I'll bet that it was hell for her son's softball coach. I'll bet he couldn't wait for that kid to graduate out of his team because you just can't be a mama bear like that.
Did you see what Lori Loughlin's daughter posted on? I just had a brain fart because I forgot which one was Felicity and which one's Lori.
Well, Lori Loughlin's the kid. His daughter is the one that is the brand imager.
So it's her. She was on Instagram before she went to college saying, I'm just really excited to go to the parties. I don't really care about class.
Right, right.
Go to the parties and the games. What else?
But that's the way a lot of kids pick their schools or go to schools. I mean, I don't know. What a stupid thing to say, right? But I think we're going to try and... Do you think, Steve, we are at the precipice of over-vilifying the Loughlins and Huffmans here?
Well, I have said all along that, I think the egregious offenders are the people who worked for the schools or the test facilitators, the people who were, changing the test. I was talking in the Business Lunch about this guy who was the tennis coach at Georgetown, apparently was implicated. He was fired a couple of years ago for violating admissions policies, and he got a positive recommendation and was hired in August in Rhode Island.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I just have very little patience for the people who say they were injured, whose kids didn't get in. It's not linear. There's not like literally or virtually a line of kids. This is my expectation.
And this is only one of about 200 examples of how it is not a fair system. I mean, no one said it's a fair system anyway.
Yeah.
That's just them taking advantage of
this
anything.
Opportunity. Right. Yeah. Okay, Mom. I hope Mrs. Toy ran it by her son Josh just to make sure he was cool with that, because A, you're not going to get $500 billion. B, you're not going to get into Stanford. So you're never going to be able to prove that he was the next kid in the door, right? I'm almost certain they don't have that list of the next kid that got cut.
Like the last four in, the first four out?
That's what we need. They do that for the NCAA basketball tournament, and they've been doing that since mid-February, right?
I'm sorry, Jefferson, you didn't get in, but you were one of the first four out.
If it's any consolation. And by the way, if any of the other kids that did get in, if they blow up for some reason, you'll be in the tournament. You'll be in the school. It doesn't work that way. Yesterday, we had a college admissions advisor on our show, and we got such interesting questions for her, and we didn't get a chance to get them all answered. Somebody said, what about scouting? Do you think that being an Eagle Scout is a big thing on a college resume? Somebody else said, what do you think about the, what do they call it? Not the leap year. What's the year that kids don't go to college?
The gap year?
The gap year. Is the gap year a good thing, a bad thing, or a neutral thing? I'm still trying to sort of reconcile myself and my grades. And they do kind of follow us for our whole lives, right? Isn't it ridiculous? But the super scores that you can use, you take your best score the first time you take the ACT, and then the best scores you get the second time, and the best scores you take the third time, and you smush them all together, and you come up with a composite best score. I don't think that's right. So we'll ask her all of these kinds of questions tomorrow at 10:30. I don't know where you will be tomorrow morning at 10:30, but if you or someone you know is in the boat of getting into a school, I think we've got some good and free advice coming, and you won't have to pay anybody $50,000. Here's what we're going to do. To get on the show, though, to talk to her, it'll cost you $100,000. We'll meet you at the Billy Goat Tavern on Lower Wacker Drive, and if you give us $100,000, we'll let you come on with the advisor and ask your questions. That'll be tomorrow at 10:30. Lots of texts about this. We'll just plow through a few of them. And then, the conspiracy theory nobody's talking about. You know that Zion Williamson, this amazing LeBron, the next LeBron James, that plays for Duke. You remember when his Nike shoe blew up in that game that the president was at against North Carolina? It was amazing. Early in the game, he plants his foot. The shoe literally rips out from underneath him. He hasn't played since then.
He played last night, didn't he?
Until last night. Here's how good this guy is. He walks on the floor after suffering a grade one knee sprain, which I think I have all the time, and he went 13 for 13 from the field. He didn't miss a shot. He blocked five shots. He got 14 rebounds, scored 29 points, and he spun plates. So there's a conspiracy theory I want to explore with you about this. The sneaker breaks out on Zion Williamson in that North Carolina game. Now it's NCAA tournament time. It's conference tournaments in the NCAA tournament. Selection Sunday is this weekend, right? So we'll find out which teams are going to be there. Duke certainly will be, and everybody will be watching Zion Williamson and Duke, particularly Zion Williamson's foot. This is from the Bleacher Report, and they're quoting reporting in the USA Today and ESPN. They said he came back, Zion Williamson did, and had this great game the other night. After making the switch from the PG 2.5s to the custom Kyrie 4s, those are the shoes, Williamson called his latest sneakers incredible, which is good news for Nike, which put a lot of effort into making sure the shoes hold up. ESPN's Allison Williamson reported that Nike flew a team of employees to Durham in order to properly measure Williamson's foot. He's 6'7", 285. I just walk onto the Nordstrom's rack, and I just pull the 10.5s or the 11s down, and I'm good to go. They put people on an airplane and flew him out just to measure his foot. Mike Krzyzewski said that Nike then sent their top people to campus the day after the blowout of the blowout incident. Those employees then made a trip to China and watched his new shoes getting made. Excuse me. Coach K attributed the February 20 blowout to wear and tear on that shoe and noted that the star will now be switching shoes more frequently. I thought they got new shoes every week. Here's the thing, though. This is what I think happened. Somebody from a competing shoe company did something to scissor the lining out of his shoes so that they would give way. And then maybe that would embarrass the company, hurt their value. Maybe the star picks up another shoe. Put it this way. If anything happens to Zion Williamson going forward, Nike is in a whole lot of hurt. They'll be fine in the long run. But just think if something else happened to Zion's sneakers now. Like, if I'm the trainer or the coach, I'm actually putting duct tape around those things. I'm got rubber bands going around. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to do everything humanly possible to make sure that that shoe stays together.
So there's like a shoe pirate, something like the Hamburglar for shoes going after Nike.
You give the ball boy for the Duke team, say, listen, you're a ball boy. It's nice, but here's 100 large.
So if this is like the Inflategate version of...
Kind of, right. You've got to get inside the locker room, do something to compromise the sneaker. It blows out, it's embarrassing, and suddenly something happens.
Got to say, I've never worried about my shoes exploding in my life until that moment.
Yeah, well, but you're not 6'8", 285.
Far from it.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that's it. It's the amount of force. Think about how much pressure that guy's putting down when he springs off of those off the floor. Steve, I've got exciting news. We're moving on from the college admission scandal story.
As if you ever can really leave it behind.
Well, we'll be coming back to it. Last few texts. So, John, you're telling people that... that's how it is, so just suck it up. People like you are the problem, John, that things are this way. Shameless to you. And I don't think I was saying that it's okay. I'm saying that if you're going to sue the school $500 billion because you or your kid didn't get in, then you are a whole another new problem. I mean, that's off the charts. Hi, John and everyone. Did you see what Olivia Jade Lori Loughlin said about her dad, that he faked his way through school? It's an interview she did with People magazine, signed Sue. John, I really hope you use the word poor Laura with sarcasm. I don't feel sorry one bit. Cheaters never win. It's karma. And 630 said, hey, King John, what does the chairman of USC make to afford that kind of yacht and lifestyle? I'm sorry, what does this have to do with what they're paying the chairman of USC now? And he has a fancy yacht and lifestyle? Producer Aleph, what does the chairman of the USC make, please?
According to Forbes magazine, C.L. Max Nikias, president of the University of Southern California, made $3,182,364 in 2015.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to say it either.
Okay, now you know this isn't recorded, so that's a plus side for this.
It's the real thing.
It's the real thing.
$3 million.
Whatever. What's the coach make? I mean, I'll bet their basketball and football coaches make a multiple of that. Lori Lighton's product sponsors are canceling, and bravo, these rich folks need to see jail time. Do you think there's a chance any of these famous folks are going to go to jail? Any of these people that cheated their way into school?
I doubt it.
I don't think that's a good use of the public resources.
Right. I mean, scholarship money, that's what they'll do.
Let's put in low-life kids that smoke too much marijuana. Let's get them in jail instead. Hey, did you see? So here's the story that made me think about you, Steve Bertrand.
Low-life kids who smoke marijuana?
There it is, yeah. Stand by. There's an op-ed piece by Nancy Armour in the USA Today, today this week. And it's about how they have to stop playing the national anthem at sporting events and depatriotize our athletics.
You just like to throw me into that, don't you?
Yeah, I'm with you on this. She said, Whitney Houston's performance of the Star-Spangled Banner at the 1991 Super Bowl during the height of the first Gulf War still gives me chills. There are times when a rousing patriotic performance or song does seem to be appropriate, right? But then she writes, but we're not at war now, and it'll take a lot more than a song to bridge this country's great divide. She said, playing the anthem before our football, baseball, basketball, hockey, and soccer games has become a lazy excuse for patriotism. Standing at attention or a loose approximation of it for 2 minutes no more proves love of country or gratitude for those who serve than wearing an American flag pin does. I think that's a well-phrased view. Even if you don't agree with it, I think she's She hit it on the head there. It's a lazy excuse for patriotism. Well, I'll stand for the national anthem. And if you don't, then shame on you, because look at what we're all doing here.
Right. It's not about what people are doing. It's about those who don't. Right?
Yeah. Well, evidently.
I wonder how that started, where it started, or...
Didn't it start with that?
With what?
I'm thinking 9/11, but she remembers it after the
That was a rousing addition because we were at war at the time in the first Gulf War. That's, I think, what she's referring to. But I mean, just performing, and I think I have asked people from other countries, I don't remember their answer, if they play the national anthem before, like, say, do they play before a soccer match in England? They don't play the British, the God Save the Queen or something, do
they? I'm guessing not. The funny thing is, for all of the argument about should you kneel or not, and is it too patriotic, should they roll the giant field-size flag out or not, the only people that usually see that are the people that are there. It's not televised. You know, you might see highlights or clips of it, but if you think about it, we don't always see and hear the seventh inning song that they play at a Yankees game. You don't see at a football game the national anthem always sung. I don't believe that's a feature of the Bears broadcast.
I mean, after 9/11, it became they would pause right at the seventh inning now for God Bless America.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure it makes me sound terrible, but...
I know. Well, listen, I don't even like the giant flag that they roll out there, mm-hmm. and I think that says more about me than it does about them.
I'm more concerned and on solider ground in saying we have over-militarized our sporting events.
Well, maybe that's...
That's what I do. I truly don't like, that... And God bless the veterans and all of that. But, you know, the military's paying for that at a lot of these sporting events to get more recruits.
It's a commercial.
I want them to get as many recruits as they need, don't get me wrong, but it's a transaction. The teams are being paid to honor the veterans.
And it ain't going away as long as that continues to happen.
Right.
Okay. So
and then it's under the guise of patriotism. That's what bothers me, I guess. It's a money transaction, and we're supposed to feel patriotic about
Well,
it.
Well, there's two things I hate about it.
Why
one
did
is
you do this to me?
I don't like measuring patriotism anyway, right? Are you more patriotic than me? I don't even want to have that conversation. And number two, I don't like it from the top down. If it feels like it's coming from the military or from the president or from the Chicago Bears or from the anybody, then I feel like that is, in fact, not the essence of patriotism.
Right.
Patriotism is of the people.
It's a litmus test.
It is, it feels like you're being judged if you're critical of this cram down.
Right.
Okay, so Nancy Armour continues, I've long griped about the singers who treat the anthem as if they're auditioning for American Idol, drawing out the words for dramatic effect, punctuating their performance with theatrical hand gestures. We can have that argument another day. I think some of those dramatic performances are dramatic. They're true to the artist. But anyway, for the last 2 years since the NFL protests began, I've watched the crowd at the games I attend to see what fans actually do during the anthem. And while there are some who stand quietly at attention, their hats off, I've seen many others texting, taking photos, talking to their friends, looking for their seats, scanning the skies in anticipation of a flyover. I've even seen some vaping during the Star Spangled Banner. Well, I'm not surprised to hear that. This is just in the section right in front of me, mind you. I know there are plenty of others beyond my view who are roaming the concourses, using the restrooms, even buying beer and hot dogs in the stadiums that don't shut down concessions during the anthem. I've often wondered about that. It's, you know, once you are in view of the flag or the field, once you're, you know, outside the concourse, then everybody stands at attention. But people feel no need to, in the concourses and in the hot dog stands, stand at attention or pause. It's like they're not there. They're feet away from the people who are. But there's that dividing line.
It's another example of sort of how you're doing it to be seen.
I guess that's it, right? Yeah. If I can see you out there not standing at attention, then by golly,
you're in trouble.
You're not with us. And then she says, and where to begin with the Kansas City Chiefs fans who rewrite Home of the Brave with the loud shout of Chiefs. Boy, don't tell her what we do at Blackhawks games, because if the national anthem has to be respected as an anthem unto itself and not something else, then the Blackhawks got it completely wrong. But I think the Blackhawks have it completely right. Talk about organic and talk about goose bumpy. That works every single time. It's almost not even in the same conversation the way they do the national anthem for the Blackhawks games. But if at the end of the Kansas City Chiefs games they say the home of the Chiefs, I don't know what to make of that. But when I read this article, Steve, I thought, well, oh, Lord, now I'm looking over here at my phone line.
You thought, oh, well, here's a way to get Bertrand in trouble.
All our phone lines are ringing.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Wonder what they have to say. Well, a lot of you are calling in to express your views about Steve Bertrand's views about patriotism. Let's take some calls. We'll start with Jerry. You're on WGN. Hi, Jerry. How are you?
Very good, John. I don't always agree with you, but you hit a sore spot with me, so I'm on your side.
Okay, I'm glad you called. What's your thought?
Well, I happened to be at the VA facility not too long ago, and I just saw a little note up on the bulletin board. It said if the United States was under attack by North Korea or another one of their enemies, the military will not respond. They'll simply take a knee and let the NFL deal with it.
It's pretty well put, Jerry.
Oh, by the way, John, have you ever paid your kid off for making that 7-10 split?
Gosh, I wish we had more time, Jer. I'm going to run now.
Bye, John.
Take care. Laura, you don't know that story, do you? It has to do with thousands of years ago when my son was bowling with us. By the way, I was at the new Lucky Strike bowling alley across from Wrigley Field. I'll tell you about that in a minute. Last night, Grant had a 7-10 split. I said, I'll give you $1,000 if you pick it up. He picked it up.
No way.
So then I took a lot of heat from America because I didn't give him $1,000. I said that was a rhetorical statement akin to, I'll give you $1,000,000 if you. But I said $1,000, and a lot of people were very angry at me for not giving my son $1,000, even though at the time I was paying for his room and board. He was in junior high.
Well, did you specifically say bucks or dollars? Because then you really could play it to your side.
I could give him some reindeer or something like that,
exactly.
You mean? Elif says, I got to take another break. Take another break? No, keep going. Okay, keep going. Let's talk to Guy. You're on WGN. Guy, jump in there. What do you want to say?
Hey, John, everybody. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
You had said the one place you never seen the national anthem on TVs. The one thing I will say is anytime, and I don't care which network it's on, whether it be Fox, TNT, NBC, whoever happens to be picking it up, you will always see the national anthem, and they will always show you the flyover. Yeah. That is the one place consistently that will show the anthem.
You told producer Elif that you're speaking about NASCAR events, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not surprising. Mm-hmm. And now that you mentioned it, I'm just kind of playing back because I do watch a lot of NASCAR. And you're right. I sure have seen it there, haven't I?
Yeah, and we were just out in Vegas a couple of weeks ago, and Nellis Air Force Base is located right next door to the racetrack. And to see the Thunderbirds come across in the formation, it is just a sight to behold. And I do agree, you see so many people with their cameras up trying to get it on film. You got to live for the moment, because just to see that flyover is so breathtaking. It's unbelievable.
Have you watched by any chance the Netflix series they have right now about Formula One racing in the world?
I have not.
So I just watched the first two episodes the other night. It is so amazing. It's called Drive to Survive. It's a Netflix original series. We don't have any sense in this country what a big deal Formula One racing is around the world. Like the top driver for the Mercedes team last year made $43 million in salary. That's not endorsements. There's 10 teams, 2 cars each, 20 cars zipping around these cities, you know, Monaco, Paris, places like that, Dubai. And it's real. And each episode is like 30, 40 minutes long. It's called Drive to Survive, and if you like motorsports, check that out too, okay, Gary? Or Guy?
I appreciate that, John. I'm going to have to check it out.
Yeah, have a good day, man. Let's go to Robert. You're on WGN. Robert, jump in there. You're on the air.
Hey, I'll make it quick. Enjoy your show as much as I can.
Thank you.
Set the table. 1973, my dad, Korean vet, World War II, PTSD, suffering terribly. They turned their back on him. The VA turned their back, and didn't really get any help. And I was a high school athlete, and national anthem, I took a knee and turned my back, and that was my protocol. And it really didn't bet. Not a lot of people got too upset, coach, but that was my honor to my dad, who, you know, passed from that situation, defending our country and not really anybody backing him up.
What year were you doing that, Robert?
1973.
Oh, yeah, pardon me. I think you just said that too, didn't you? Wow.
Yeah.
And that wasn't on our... We weren't having a national conversation about that, and whatever you were doing, people didn't make a big fuss about it, huh?
Coach and the vice principal, they weren't happy with me, but, you know, hey, it was my dad, and I had to stand for something, and, you know, it was the moment of truth for me.
But even now, you know, I mean, suppose your kid were to do that now for the same principled reason, I think I would support that, right?
Well, it's funny, ironic, I ran a sporting, many sporting events. I was a commissioner of a league, and one of my jobs was to secure the national anthem and play it for every game. So, you know, 30 years later.
Comes around, doesn't it? That's funny.
It sure does.
Robert, thanks for the call. My best to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you joining us. That's an interesting angle on that story. It's 1:55 on WGN. By the way, how would you feel if your son or daughter were going to compete on The Bachelorette? Would you be thumbs up and kind of thrilled about the new fame and notoriety your son or daughter had? Or would you be like, oh, no, really? This from today's Chicago Tribune. There are several contestants from the Chicago area on the upcoming season of The Bachelorette. Yes, it's still a TV show, including the son of WGN Channel 9 reporter and fill-in anchor Nancy Liu. It's surreal, and my husband and I are still processing it all, she said. But we're excited for his journey and hope you'll express your support however you can. The season debuts May 13th. Of course, I told him, don't be stupid, Liu wrote on Facebook. Her son, Connor Jenkins, is one of 33 contestants on season 15, which is scheduled to premiere at 7 o'clock May 13th on ABC. He's 28, went to Barrington High School. He now lives in California. Five of the suitors are from the Chicago area. One's a real estate guy named Dustin Kendrick. There's the Elgin Packaging Company sales representative, Joe Barsano, Chicagoan Scott Anderson, and Mantino fitness trainer Kevin Fortenberry. Do you know any Fortenberries down from the Mantino area, Steve Bertrand? Fortenberry, does that ring a bell to you?
It does not.
There's some Fortenberries in Mantino. That's your stomping grounds, and one of them is going to be on the next season of The Bachelorette.
No kidding.
Brown hails from Alabama. And Brown, this other young man we're speaking about, is the son of Nancy Liu, the Channel 9 reporter and fill-in anchor. He's from Alabama now, was selected to be... Brown, who hails from Alabama, was selected to be the Bachelorette. So this is the woman. After the Bachelor star Colton Underwood broke up with her near the end of the show's most recent season and chose Cassie Randolph to be his girlfriend. I don't even know what I just said. It's amazing to me that that show is still a going concern. And I have a college-educated member of my family who loves to watch that program with friends. And we said, well, is that people just kind of like hate watching? They're just watching it because it's a train wreck or because they're really into it?
They say they're hate watching, but
that's
they're not.
Laura, that's exactly what I got.
Oh, my gosh. It makes me so angry. I'm with you. I don't get it. I don't get it. I can't even watch 5 minutes of it.
The trailers make me just go, oh, my God, how would you want to be on that show? But not only do people watch it, but folks are still lining up to be on it. And I understand the mom's concern. It's like, okay, just don't be stupid. But the problem is...
Then you won't stay on the show.
Or you don't control the edit, right? I mean...
Exactly.
You could say, Mom, I didn't do one stupid thing, but whoa, did they make me look bad.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
Still living.
Here's John Williams.
We're in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's 2:08, and this is John. We're here weekdays 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 to noon. Don't miss the Mincing Rascals. Mincing Rascals was judged by the Headliners Club to be the best podcast in the city of Chicago. We dropped a new pod for you last night about 5 o'clock. The Mincing Rascals. On social media, I'm WGN King John. A lot of you are liking the video I posted a couple of days ago of the ice melting in Chicago. Yeah, there used to be ice on Lake Michigan, and as it was cracking up, literally breaking up and fracturing off, it actually broke off like in these square and rectangular, these interesting geometric-shaped thin plates, and they were literally skating across the top of the ice as the water and the ice was all crushing in on the shore. I've never seen anything like it. Brenda and I are walking along, and we heard this popcorn sound, went over, and we just saw this phenomenon. I posted it on my Instagram, and a lot of you were liking that. Out our 18th-story window on Instagram, I just posted a picture of what now is the ever-growing bike and pedestrian trail, the Riverwalk, which is now from, say, Michigan Avenue all the way down to Columbus. It's getting so close to the lake. That Riverwalk has been a great new feature. It's amazing it took the city this long to do that. And now they've got it all the way down to Columbus Avenue. At least the muddy trail is, but they've cleaned it up and everything is set now for planting and landscaping. And we've been watching it out our window. I shared that picture on my Instagram page. Again, on all social media, WGN King John. Speaking of social media, there's a podcast called Legal Face Off. It's co-hosted by Rich Lenkoff, and he's in our studio. Hi, Rich. How are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
You're a big-time attorney in town, if I'm not mistaken.
Something like that.
Where do you practice when you're not doing Legal Face Off or watching Big Ten basketball at the United Center?
Yes, just came from there. Just a big victory by Michigan State. I practice at Bryce Downey and Lenkoff, a firm here in Chicago.
Saw a story in the news. By the way, what do you make? We talked about this earlier before we go to the reason I asked you to come
in. How much do I make? Is that what you're asking me?
$500 billion lawsuit against Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin. I think I said earlier it was against the school, but this unhappy mother whose son did not get into some of the schools that these women's children did is suing Huffman and Loughlin for $500 billion. What's your thought on that?
Billion with a B, right? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're going to see a lot of these lawsuits, obviously, in the wake of this college cheating scandal. There is one that's going to be a class action filed by people who are alleging that their degrees, like the woman who is alleging that her Stanford degree is now devalued because of this. But yeah, this woman is saying that she would have gotten in but for this cheating. I mean, obviously, if you're defending that, you're asking, how do you know? I mean, how do you know you're the one person whose spot she took?
What do you think of the number?
And importantly, right, I mean, to get to your other question, how do you quantify the damages? How do you get to $500 billion? That's a ridiculous amount, obviously.
Well, it's always, but how do you ever, right? Like, if I break my leg, I guess there are actuarial tables, but it's somewhat subjective, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it depends. In a personal injury lawsuit, a lot of which I defend, I mean, there are actual ways to quantify things like pain and suffering and damages, and you look at the amount of medical bills. To an extent, though, you're right. It is, you know, somewhat subjective. A lot of it is punitive. When you get to punitive, that is meant, obviously, to punish a party, and that is not as quantifiable. But $500 billion, I mean, that's a little nuts.
Thank you.
That's my official legal opinion. It's a little nuts.
Yeah, you didn't need to go to law school to hammer that out.
Correct.
Here's a headline in on Slate, but this is I believe this is on the Tribune site and elsewhere. Connecticut Supreme Court issues stunning decision allowing Sandy Hook families to sue gun manufacturer. This really doesn't relate to what happened in Christchurch, but in this country, we've long wondered what sort of pushback do we have against the gun industry, and it seems like they operate with a lot of impunity. They get to do what they do, sell guns. It's the Second Amendment. I'm not arguing that today. I'm just saying, should there sometimes be lawsuits against the gun manufacturers themselves? If a car damages you, you get to sue Ford. If a chemical damages you, you get to sue a chemical manufacturer. If a gun somehow wrongly damages you, you have no recourse against gun manufacturers. Particularly in this case, though, there was a 4-3 decision by the Connecticut Supreme Court, and what they decided was that not that you can sue them per se, but that the grounds you can sue them will be if they advertise their weapons, their guns, in a way that is deemed not hunting. I don't have the exact language in front of me. Here it is. Families of the Sandy Hook massacre and other mass shootings cannot sue gun shops and manufacturers for negligently making or selling assault weapons. But the Sandy Hook families pursued a different theory. They argued that Remington, those are the people that made the AR-15 style weapon, their lawsuit cited multiple ads that depicted the gun not as a tool of home defense, hunting, or sport, but as a weapon of war meant to kill a large number of people in a small amount of time. Remington advertises the gun as the ultimate combat weapon system used by armed forces, theaters of war. It depicts a close-up of the gun with the slogan, "Forces of opposition, bow down, you are single-handedly outnumbered." It touted the weapon as an uncompromising choice with proven military performance. The Connecticut Supreme Court explained the thrust of Remington's ads was that the gun would enable a shooter to inflict unparalleled damage and carnage. And that is not something that we allow people to do with those guns. So they're advertising something that is, in fact, illegal.
Yeah, it's a really interesting legal theory that the Sandy Hook families pursued. I mean, of course, they've been trying to legally go after parties like the gun industry for years in the wake of the Sandy Hook shooting. And because of this congressional act that was passed in 2005, companies like Remington enjoy largely immunity from these kind of lawsuits. As you mentioned, they cannot be sued pursuant to this act for negligence. So in this case, they pursued, as you mentioned, this theory that is an exception to the act in Congress that does allow you to pursue damages if you can prove that there was advertising that is meant to, the words they use are, in an unfair, unethical, or dangerous manner. And to your point, in this case, the Supreme Court of Connecticut found by a narrow margin that the advertising was in the, you know, in the environment that we're living in, where we know that there are shooters using guns, that the advertising was meant to foster this kind of, you know, behavior.
So it's okay to have a gun. And it's okay to use the gun to hunt or to do or defend yourself or to practice shooting for sport. But if you're using it to inflict damage, if you're using it as an offensive weapon against people, well, if you're advertising that, right? If you're advertising
correct.
That, then you've run afoul of the law.
It's basically an advertising statute that they are allowed to now pursue. And the court didn't rule in their favor, remember, not on the merits of the case. This was only a motion. This was a appeal of a lower court's decision that barred the lawsuit from proceeding under the congressional act. So all the court in Connecticut did was say your lawsuit is allowed to proceed. It's allowed to go to the jury, and we will let the jury decide whether Remington is guilty of violating this Connecticut state statute. And if they are, what damages should result?
Well, that's the question to me. I mean, I wonder what the remedy would be then. Would it be that I'd get money in a civil suit? But would also mean they could still make that gun and manufacture that gun. Going forward, they would probably just amend their advertising, right?
A couple things to keep in mind in response to your question is Remington, and the reason that this lawsuit took a little while, the ruling took a little while, is Remington declared bankruptcy recently because of sales issues. So they're not selling as many guns. So they will probably not be as affected by, in terms of sales, by a verdict in the plaintiff's favor. But we talked earlier about punitive damages. The main thrust of a lot of this litigation is to pursue punitive damages, which, you know, can be incredible, which can be, you know, a ton. And that is meant to dissuade companies from, you know, pursuing acts that you don't think are appropriate.
Okay, I understand that, I think. I don't like those ads, but I don't know that I'm convinced that those ads caused that man to buy that gun and that their kids got killed because of those advertisements.
Well, you know what's interesting is he didn't buy the gun. Adam Lanza, who was the shooter in the Sandy Hook shootings, remember, he took the gun from his mother, who he later killed, who legally purchased the gun in that case. So it's kind of interesting. We were, Chase and I were talking about this earlier on the way in, that if your theory is that they violated the statute by marketing to people like Adam Lanza, the defense would be, well, he didn't buy the gun, therefore the marketing didn't work because you weren't marketing to him. They would still argue that you're generally marketing to these kind of people and he got the gun because of it. But interestingly, he did not buy the gun.
Okay, so maybe I find that kind of advertising offensive. And maybe in this case, it's not a perfect case. Maybe it's moot because he didn't make the purchase. But still, what do you think about holding gun manufacturers liable for the actions of gun owners? Is that reasonable?
Well, it's similar to, you know, the question of you raised earlier. Do you sue alcohol purveyors because people get, you know, into car accidents or have DUIs?
I don't know that I do. I might sue the bar that overserved them, but I don't sue Budweiser because they make a product that causes people to drive badly.
Yeah, I mean, the answer to your question, as a defense lawyer, as someone who defends a lot of these type of lawsuits, I don't think it's a meritorious suit. I do think, you know, I feel very bad for the families. We've had on Legal Face-Off one of the mothers involved who's leading, you know, some of these campaigns. But, you know, I don't necessarily think that gun manufacturers should be responsible in these conditions. I think You know, it's a bit of a stretch. I think it's a novel legal theory. I just don't think it's appropriate, in my opinion.
I don't want those guns. I don't like those guns. I'm not a gun guy. I'm no friend of the gun lobby. But I don't. I just think it's asking a lot to say, because think if extrapolate that to other industries, right? Maybe you go the other way.
Of course. Yeah.
Maybe now Budweiser is in trouble when somebody DUIs, right? I don't think it's fair to say that because they manufactured that gun, they should be they should be liable for damages.
Well, the real question, and the main one of the main victories in this case, is what the gun manufacturers were doing behind closed doors. Were they really advertising? Were they aware of this audience, this market of, you know, deranged shooters, and were they marketing to those people?
What do you think the answer to that is?
Well, we didn't know. We, you know, back in the day of tobacco litigation, no one thought there'd be all this, you know, smoking gun memos about targeting you know, kids, and there was. I don't think you're going to find a smoking gun memo where Remington says, yes, let's market to deranged shooters, but the wording of their advertisements that's already, you know, out there, it's pretty provocative stuff.
Forces of opposition, bow down. You are single-handedly outnumbered, says one ad. Here's another one. They call the weapon an uncompromising choice with proven military performance. The Connecticut Supreme Court mentioned that one of the ads said it would enable a shooter to inflict unparalleled carnage.
That's pretty strong stuff. And remember, you know, you'll be presenting this to a jury, likely a jury in Connecticut, that's sensitive to Sandy Hook. And if, you know, you're in that jury box and you hear those advertisements and it's geared towards a shooter to inflict maximum carnage, that's pretty provocative stuff.
Well, that would appeal to somebody.
Absolutely.
Who's unhinged, right?
It could. I mean, the question is, can they prove that there was an intent to market that way? That's
right.
A pretty high standard.
Okay, right, because somebody who really just wants to do target shooting might yet be inspired by that. They're not asking people to go kill people. They're just saying, this is just a very aggressive, macho sales pitch to people that are aggressive and macho.
Which is inherent to guns, right? I mean, those same words can be used, you know, innocently for people who want to use the gun for completely legal methods.
Okay, now this 4-3 Connecticut ruling, the Connecticut State Supreme Court, again, doesn't say anything other than a case can go forward.
Correct.
They have grounds to sue them based on the advertising.
Correct.
Okay.
Based on the state statute.
If you've got a question or comment about that, Rich Lenkoff is here. The number is 312-981-7200. Call or text now. All right, let's finish this conversation with Legal Faceoff co-host Rich Lenkoff, who we asked to leave the Big Ten tournament over at the UC to talk a little bit about this, what some people are saying might be groundbreaking ruling by the Connecticut State Supreme Court that would allow the Sandy Hook families the opportunity to sue Remington. I can't believe that Remington is bankrupt, did you say?
Yeah, they declared bankruptcy. We were surprised, too, looking at that, because, you know, I thought they have done well. I mean, there's been...
If you can't make money selling guns in America now, then maybe you shouldn't be in business.
Yeah, although,
how did that happen?
I mean, you know, with all the news about shootings, I mean, Dick's has been on the news lately because they have not sold, they've stopped selling guns.
Oh, really?
In fact, Mayor Emanuel just did a Instagram post praising them and saying people should shop there. Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways gun sales have been up recently, especially under Trump. But in the wake of some of these, you know, tragedies, I think that there's been a lot of issues. And certainly now with lawsuits, I think they're going to take even more of a hit.
I was under the impression that gun sales in America went up when Barack Obama was president because there was the specter that he was going to take away your guns, so people were loading up.
But yeah.
I don't know what the truth on that is. Dave wanted to jump in here. You're on WGN. Hi, Dave.
Yes, good afternoon, King John.
Hey.
2 points I was telling your producer. One, that mental illness cannot be discovered until after the fact. We've all learned that. You can't walk down the street and point out somebody and say, oh, this guy might be nuts. We don't know, okay? And in World War II, contractors who had nothing to do with weapons manufacture were manufacturing weapons because the country needed them. One example would be International Harvester, who manufactured the M1 rifle.
What's your point about this case, though, Dave?
Pardon?
I'm sorry, I'm short of time. What's your point about this case, though?
The case is you can't really sue a manufacturer, okay?
Yeah, that's... Listen, I think you may be right about that. I don't know. Thanks for the call, Dave, but I mean, extrapolate from that. If we do allow that, then where could this kind of reasoning go?
Yeah, again, it's a slippery slope. I mean, that's why the inability to sue the manufacturer directly is why you haven't seen lawsuits like this. That's why the immunity statute exists. Again, in this case, they've successfully, you know, gone around that, and they're pursuing this advertising theory. It's, at the end of the day, a similar idea, right? I mean, you're suing a manufacturer for something that someone did that you can't predict. The whole question is, can you predict it? Can you predict that by advertising in the way that you mentioned, someone would interpret that or use that to go out and shoot people? I think that's a slippery slope. I think it's a stretch. The Connecticut Supreme Court has at least disagreed.
When do we hear your next podcast?
We're taping on Thursday of next week. We'll be covering all the legal breaking news. You know, the good news is there's no shortage of content nowadays with R. Kelly and Smollett. We've got R. Kelly's lawyer on Thursday. We'll be covering, you know, that and this story and lots of other stuff.
So that pod will drop then Thursday afternoon?
Thursday afternoon, absolutely, right on WGN.
Make sure you listen to Legal Face Off. Thank you, Steve.
No problem.
Where's Laura? She's supposed to be sprinting in here. Where's she?
Just went the wrong way. Lauren?
Yeah.
She's walking towards Studio A.
You think she's not going to come in because I got her name wrong? Is that maybe not helping me encourage her to participate in this segment?
And now she's coming the other direction.
Play-by-play provided by Steve Bertrand. Kind of digging this. What are we listening to here, Elif Garris?
This, my friend, is Black Moth Super Rainbow. They're going to be playing at the Sleeping Village Wednesday at 8. Tickets start at $20, and there's more info you can find at sleeping-village.com. There's a lot of music events going on this weekend, but I wasn't as jazzed about them as I am about this, which is on Wednesday at 8 at Sleeping Village.
Black Moth Super Rainbow. Okay. Also coming up this weekend, the Talia Hall Architectural Tour continues. It's a weekend brunch series from 9 to 3. You get to brunch, and then you get to tour the beautiful music venue, Talia Hall. Is it Thalia or Talia? I should know the answer to that. Which one is it?
Talia.
Talia. Talia Hall. Yeah. So that's Talia Hall Architectural Tour continues. What else is going on this weekend?
Well, right now, one of the biggest things that I'm paying attention to is the Big Ten basketball tournament, because Purdue is playing at 6, and that is my alma mater. So I'm very excited about that game, and Purdue's very good at basketball. Not so good at football, so definitely hoping that we can win the championship this year.
Rich Lankaw was here just a minute ago, and he said if you go, you can get a really good seat. You know, you pay your money, and then you just walk down to the best seats, and it's good basketball at the UC. Okay, how about this one? I've got the Bulls are taking on the Clippers tonight at 9:30. The White Sox play the Cubs today at 3 here on WGN Radio. Yeah, in 21 minutes, we bring you sunny, warm baseball from Arizona on the radio. Rokan Anadavlantis will also start at 3. They'll be on the stream at WGNRadio.com. And the Blackhawks are in Montreal tomorrow against the Canadiens at 6. Listen for our pregame coverage. They can still do it, you know. Pre-game coverage at 5:30. What else you got this weekend?
Well, obviously, it's St. Patrick's Day this weekend, so there's going to be a lot going on for that. And believe it or not, even though I'm from the area, I have never seen the actual dying of the Chicago River.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? But that's going on tomorrow, so maybe I'll finally get out there and do it.
What time is that? Now, I don't have the time in front of me.
9 a.m.
says it's at 9 a.m. Yeah. They dyed the river green.
And actually, get this. The best viewing is from the east side of Michigan Avenue in Columbus. So if you really want good seats, even though you're standing, so good standing seats.
East side of Michigan Avenue at Columbus over here.
Yeah.
Huh? Mm-hmm. Wow, not too far from where we are.
Yeah.
St. Patrick's Day Parade kicks off at noon from Columbus and Balbo tomorrow.
There's also, if you want to do something a little different, a party cruise, a St. Patrick's Day party cruise. Two DJs, and there's 3 floors to roam on the Spirit of Chicago. And that's going to be departing from Navy Pier. Now, I think they got the time wrong on the website because it said 11:55 p.m., and I don't know how that works for a day cruise.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that's a.m.
Yeah.
Check your provider. The 22nd annual Chicago European Union Film Fest at the Gene Siskel Film Center is running through the first week of April. For the festival schedule and prices, go to SiskelFilmCenter.org.
And if you're a Mel Brooks fan, they actually have a comedy thing going on in Aurora. The Producers is a Tony-winning musical comedy. It's about two con artists who produce a show, and that's at the Paramount Theater.
Thank you, Black Moth Super Rainbow at Sleeping Village, Wednesday at 8. I guess we could have played some Irish music, too, now that I think about it. But that's been done before. Hey, listen, we are streaming now, are we not? We will be shortly on Facebook. So if you want to watch The Bright Side, I hope you do. Here's what you need to do right now. I want you to call 312-981-7200 or text to 312-981-7200. Or make sure that you like me on Facebook. I'm WGN King John, where you can post on my Facebook page. And we will be streaming live The Bright Side from our studio here. You get to wave to our brand new traffic reporter, too.
Hello!
And Purdue fan.
Heck yeah.
312-981-7200, The Bright Side, sponsored by the Joint Relief Institute, is next. Here's our little Friday song.
Some things in life are bad.
This is The Bright Side.
They can really make you mad.
We do this on Fridays.
Other things just make you swear and curse.
You call in, tell us some good news.
When you're chewing on life's gristle.
Tell us why you're smiling.
Boom. Give a whistle.
Get ready. Kevin's going to whistle. You're going to whistle for us, Kevin. I'm counting on you.
All right.
Here we go. All together now.
Always look on the bright side of life.
That was so.
Always look on.
Oh, I think that was one of your better performances.
You think so?
Oh my gosh, I think you can mail that one in.
That was, pull the audio.
I think that was. I don't know if there's a contest for whistling The Bright Side, but son, that was some of your best efforts.
Thanks,
there.
I appreciate
when you're feeling in the dumps.
All right, on Fridays, we ask you to call or text 312-981-7200. And hi, Facebook. Like me at WGN King John on Facebook. We're streaming right now. You can watch it. And by the way, we'll randomly select from some of our callers and give them this handy little Bright Side of Life pin that I'm holding up to the Facebook stream camera. It's courtesy of our friends at the Joint Relief Institute. We also randomly award them to the folks that post them on Facebook and Twitter. Their Bright Sides, Donna, Eric, Connie, Phyllis, Monica, congrats, you get a pin. You don't have a pin yet, do you, Lauren Lapka?
I do not.
We got to get you a Bright Side pin.
Yes.
Let's start with your phone calls. Margaret, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling today, Margaret?
I'm smiling because I just bought all the corned beef for our St. Patrick's Day party tomorrow. Got 47 people coming.
Whoa.
You doing the potatoes and the cabbage? You're doing it right?
The whole nine yards and Irish soda bread.
Yeah, I was just going to say. And then are you serving Guinness, too? I guess that would be the full meal, right?
Everybody kind of brings their own to drink, but we do the corned beef and the cabbage and the carrots and the potatoes.
Oh, man. It sounds good. Have a great party, okay?
Thank you.
You can text to 312-981-7200. What are we reading?
I like this one. 815 says that their bright side is that they don't have to work Saturdays anymore. So happy Friday. As someone who has worked weekends, I know that feeling.
No kidding.
That is a good bright side.
Jerry, you're on GN. What's your bright side, Jer? Jerry.
Hey.
Hold on. There you are, Jerry. You're on the air. What's your bright side?
I'm just returning from a week of serving the underprivileged in Appalachia, and it was God's work.
Good for you. And now you're back in Chicago, huh?
Well, I'm headed to Northwest Indiana. I'm not home yet, but it's been a wonderful week.
I'm glad. Drive safely, my friend.
Thank you.
That's Jerry. Let's talk to Kathy. Kathy, this is John. What's your bright side? You're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can. You sound great.
Okay, I'm a wildlife rehabilitator out in Sycamore. I just took my red-tailed hawk, big bird of prey, back to the vet for a checkup, and after 6 weeks with a broken femur and almost starved to death, she is releasable.
Always look on the bright side.
You know, we don't get that one very often. I'm so happy for you and the bird. Congrats. Wow. Let's go into the newsroom. Kim Gordon, your bright side, please.
My granddaughter's first birthday party is tomorrow.
Oh, yay.
Whoop, whoop. Kevin, in the sports, what's your bright side?
My bright side, I was thinking about you today, John, as I was driving in, because March Madness has begun, and nobody loves college hoops quite like King John. So that's my bright side. I'm just happy for you, Jen.
Guess what my bright side is?
March Madness.
March Madness is here. Lauren Lapka, what's your bright side?
My bright side is that my body is finally adjusting to not waking up at 2:30 in the morning every day.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing to do.
No.
Get used to waking up at, what, 8 in the morning, something
yeah,
like
much.
That?
That's the alarm.
I think our group bright side should be Lauren Lapka has joined the WGN Radio
Absolutely.
Family. Let's give it up for Lauren.
Thank you. We're all in on that. You guys are all so kind.
You remember now, we're live streaming on Facebook. Wave into the Facebook live stream. Producer Elif, what are we seeing on Facebook?
Jennifer says, I work in college admissions and have never had so many questions from my friends as I have this week.
Suddenly, I'm popular. Let's talk to Elise. You're on WGN. What's your bright side? You're on the air.
Hi. I was the St. Patrick's Day Queen 19 years ago, and tomorrow I get to go on the float with all my former St. Patrick's Day Queens.
Which wow. one? Is it? Which city will you be in?
Pardon?
Which city were you the St. Patrick's Day Queen of?
Chicago!
Holy cow! Royalty! I just thought, you know, maybe you'd be the Morris or something like that, but no.
No, 19 years ago, and I'm still living it up on that float. Every year, all of us queens get together.
We'll see you tomorrow and wave. Thanks, Elise. Congrats.
All right. Thanks, John.
Can I mention this one right here? This one's amazing. 815 says, my bright side of life is that my daughter donated a kidney to a friend's son, and they are both doing well. That is amazing.
Bernie, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Bernie?
I woke up this morning feeling great.
It's better than the alternative, right, Bernie?
There you go.
Similar to Kim a little bit, not a first birthday, but a bright side for 219 is her new granddaughter.
Yeah, a lot of those. How about you, Producer Elif? What are you reading?
P. Rutherford. I don't know the first name. I'm going to say his name is Paul. Says, going to see my daughter Irish dance at a St. Patrick's show tonight.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of Irish bright sides today. Now, you all behave, because I've seen you on St. Patrick's Day, and some of you will regret it the next day. Let's go to Kim. You're on WGN. Kim, what's your bright side? You're on the air.
Hi, John. My bright side is that I successfully booked a campsite in Yosemite National Park for the summer, and they're incredibly hard to get. Once they become available, they're gone in seconds.
Wow.
So we're
wow.
very excited.
Oh, wow, that sounds like fun. I have not yet been out there. I've traveled a bit now, but I haven't gone to Yosemite. I envy you. Have a great trip.
Thank you. We will.
Oh, that's right. Producer Elif said, hey, you got to give out some of those bright side pins from our friends at the Joint Relief Institute. All right, that means Christy's going to get one. Hey, Christy, you're on the air. What's your bright side?
Hi, John. My bright side is celebrating my first grandchild, a grandson. He's a week old today.
Always look on the bright side.
Congrats, Christy. Hold on. Producer Elif's going to send that little critter a brand new Bright Side of Life pin. I'm going to give one to Mary, too. Hey, Mary, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
So you're going to laugh at this because I sent it in as a text thinking I would never get through, but I did. And I was the one that texted in that my daughter donated a kidney.
So amazing.
Wow.
Absolutely.
He is just flourishing. He has grown so much. Everything is fabulous. And he just had a checkup and thumbs up. He's doing great.
So was that, but that wasn't even family. That was just a friend, right?
It was a very odd situation. The father of the child and my daughter went to high school, but didn't really know each other that well. And through a Facebook plea, she decided to be tested, and boom, she was a match.
Wow. Okay, we're going to send one to the child, one to your, is it daughter, did you say, or granddaughter?
My daughter.
Your daughter, and then one to the friend that met her on Facebook. So three bright side pins are coming your way, okay?
Wow, that's awesome. But the best news is...
No, what you guys did was awesome. It's a nice little pin, but It's not as awesome as that. What else are we reading today?
I like this one because I think a lot of people can relate. 847, their bright side is no more snow on the lawn.
John, I like this one. Daughter is a freshman at Yale, and she got in all on her own.
Well, really? That's an option? I didn't know. Wow. Who knows? Let's go to Kathy on line 12. Kathy, you're on WGN. What's your bright side, Kathy? You're on the air.
Oh, hi, John. I just connected with a friend that I met down at SIU 50 years ago, and he found me and wished me a happy birthday. That is great.
Hey, so you all are fellow Salukis then, huh?
Oh, we are. We are former Salukis, and I loved it down there.
Yeah, so. I did, too. Hey, thanks for the call, Kathy.
And I majored in communications.
Oh, well, in that case, you get the last bright side pin today. Are you ready?
I am.
Okay, hold on. Producer Ellis is going to talk to you off the air. You wear it proudly, all right?
Okay, thank you.
All right, one last one from you, Laura Lapkin.
All right, Lauren Lapkin.
That's what I'm going to be calling you
for a
while.
Okay, perfect. You know what's funny? Napkin is a nickname of mine, so Lapkin can work too.
Thank you.
Well, let's see. This one, 630 says, out of work for months, finally graduated from college at 44, got a good job, and today is their first payday.
How good is that?
Oh, yeah.
By the way, you know, I know what I did. I took the N from Lauren and put it on the end of Lapka.
It's okay. I've messed up my own name on live television, so I can't say anything.
It's Lauren, L-A-U-R-E-N, just like my niece, and then Lapka, as in Lapka.
Yeah, as in L-A-P, and then K-A, some might think like K-U-H, no, just K-A. Lauren. Say it like a Chicagoan, Lapka.
Thanks for helping us out on the bright side.
Yeah, anytime.
And, welcome again this week. Your debut has gone well. Lauren Lapka is, did I just say that right? Lauren Lapka is our new traffic friend here at WGN. Okay, we're going to pause. We're getting ready for White Sox baseball coming up next on WGN.